The mitzvah that I chose from the coming week's Sedra is Maisuk Sotim. It's the mitzvah to give a tenth of your income to tzedakah. And it's found in the Sedra by Avraham Avinu. It says, according to some Rishonim who learned these psukim the following way, it says that Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem Hotzi Lechem V'yayin V'hu Kohen Le'el Yom. Malki Tzedek, who was the king of Sholem, which is Yerushalayim, and that was the original name of Yerushalayim, Sholem, and he was a Kohen, so he brought out Lechem and Yayin for Avraham Avinu after he returned from the war with the four kings, which he successfully brought back the captives, Lot included, that they captured from Sodom. And it says that Vayitein lo Maiser Mikol. So some Mefarshim learn Vayitein lo means that Avraham Avinu gave Malki Tzedek Maiser from everything that he brought back from the war. Now, even though later on Avraham Avinu gave back everything to Melech Sodom, right, he said, I don't want to take a shoelace from you. But halachically, everything really belonged to Avraham Avinu. The halacha is, hamatzel min hagayis, person who goes to war and saves what is, under normal circumstances, would have been captured, conquered during the war, and he saves it. So all those things belong to him. They don't belong to the original owner. Because once it was in danger of being taken away, it becomes hefker. That's called avuda mimenu mikol adam, and it's something that's lost to the person beyond his control, and under normal circumstances he couldn't have saved it. So anything that was basically in danger or was actually taken away by the four kings against the five kings, and Melech Sodom was one of the five kings, didn't belong to them anymore. So anybody who came and now conquered it, captured it back, it belongs to him. So really, everything that Avraham Avinu captured back that originally belonged to Sodom and Melech Sodom didn't belong to him anymore, belonged to Avraham Avinu. So therefore, he gave Maiser. If that's the case, why didn't he want to keep it? Because he realized that Melech Sodom didn't agree with that. He considered everything his, whether it was his to begin with or not, surely things that weren't his to begin with. And if Avraham would have taken it, Melech Sodom would have said, I gave it to Avraham and I made him rich, which would have been a terrible chilul Hashem. So Avraham Avinu didn't want any presents from Melech Sodom, even what he considered to be a present, even though it really halachically wasn't. In addition, we see that when Avraham Avinu took the Maiser, he also included a tenth of what Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre also had. He didn't give them their portion until after he took off the whole Maiser. Really didn't have to do that, because their portion, they could take Maiser off, not him. So he should have given them their portion, and then of what he captured, and then take Maiser at least over what was left, what could have been his. But he took Maiser from the entire amount, even including what was rightfully Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. That's why he didn't let Melech Sodom take back from Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre their portion. You could be a tzaddik on your cheshbon, not on somebody else's cheshbon. So Avraham Avinu said, halachically, this money belongs to me and to Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, who helped me also. And I am willing to forfeit it and give it back to Melech Sodom, but they don't have to. So he gave them their portion. That he did take away from Melech Sodom and gave to them. Okay, in any case, so from here we see that there's an idea of giving Maiser, and happened to give it to a Kohen, but it wasn't Maiser of grain, it was Maiser of money, of profits that he made in conquering or returning the Rechush that had been Melech Sodom's. Okay, we don't learn the halacha of Maiser from here, but it's a case where we see that the Avos were Mekayim what the Torah later on would say to do. Okay. Now, whether there is a chiyuv min haTorah or midrabbana or not at all to give Maiser Ksavim is a machlokas Rishonim. Tosfos and the Tashbats hold that we learn from Aser to Aser that there are two kinds of miser that a person has to give. We know that the Torah specifically speaks about miser from grain, right? You have to give miser rishon to the Levi, miser sheni you take and eat in Yerushalayim, and miser oni once every 3 years you give to the aniyim, right? Which, let's review that anyway. The seder of miseris is that every year, except for Shemitah, there are two miseris that you have to give. Basically, you give a tenth to the Levi. That is standard. Tenth of your crops. After you take off that tenth from what's left, the 90%, you take off another tenth, which is called Miser Sheni, but that's only done the first 2 years of Shemitah and the fourth and fifth year of Shemitah. And that Miser Sheni you take to Yerushalayim. Either you take the grain itself, or you exchange the grain for money, and you take the money to Yerushalayim, and you buy food with it. Only things that are edible. And you eat the food in Yerushalayim. You can't remove that food from Yerushalayim, and you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. When you're Tahar, and it is Tahar. And that's the Halacha Maaser Sheni. In the third year of Shemitah, and in the sixth year of Shemitah, instead of Maaser Sheni, you take Maaser Ani. So in fact, by taking two miseris, you're giving a fifth of your grain to two different causes. A tenth to the Levium, a tenth on the first 2 years, and fourth and fifth year of Shemitah, you take to Yerushalayim and eat yourself. And the third and sixth year, you're giving the second tenth to poor people. Okay, so since it says Aser Te'aser, so we learn from there that there's another miser that you have to give to, and that is miser on your profits of what you earn. Aside from grain, you have to give miser on money too. And they hold, therefore, that miser ksofim is from the Torah chiyuv to give miser ksofim. Okay. The Be'er Yaakov says that the halacha of giving a tenth of your earnings only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Because since we learn it from the other miser, and miser is only in Eretz Yisrael, so the halacha of giving a tenth of your earnings is also only in Eretz Yisrael. That is what's it called. And in Chutz La'aretz, it's only rabbinic. The rabbis extended it like they did with Miser, Chala, whatever, into Chutz La'aretz, and Miser, Trumas and Miser. It's also in certain places of Chutz La'aretz. Originally, there was a Din D'Rabbanan to take off Trumas and Miser. So, too, they extended the halacha of Miser Ksofim to Chutz La'aretz. But it's only rabbinic in Chutz La'aretz. That's the Be'er Yaakov's opinion. Then there's another opinion, the Maril, that the whole chiyuv is only Darabonah. This whole thing is only an asmachta, that you have to give a tenth of your earnings. From the Torah, it's only a tenth of grain. And a tenth of your earnings is a purely rabbinic thing, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. There's no difference between them. You have to give, rabbinically, you're chayiv to give a tenth of your earnings. And then there's a third opinion. And according to this opinion, that it's only rabbinic, some say that the Rabbanan only made their takana in Chutz La'aretz, the opposite. Because in Eretz Yisrael, there's regular Maiser, the Maiser of grain. So they didn't have to make another Maiser. But in Chutz La'aretz, there's no such thing as Maiser. There, they made such a thing that you can give from your earnings. So according to this, the Yad Shol, right, there is no chiyuv to give a tenth of your earnings in Eretz Yisrael, only in Chutz La'aretz. Okay. And it's only rabbinic. And the last opinion is the Shvus Yaakov and the Chavis Yoyer. They both say that the whole idea of Maaser Ksofim is only a minig. It's not a chiyuv, not rabbinic, not from the Torah. It's a minig, it's a nice thing to do, but there's no chiyuv at all. You don't have to do it. Okay. However, if somebody was nohag to do it, okay, it becomes a neder. And then he's chayv to do it from the Torah as a neder. Okay. However, if you did it, and you thought you had to do it, you didn't realize that you have a choice, that it's only a voluntary thing. You thought you had to do it, then it doesn't become a nether. And as soon as you find out that you made a mistake, and you thought you had to do it and you didn't have to, then you can decide not to do it, or to do it, as we'll explain, in various ways to make it much easier. Okay. But if you knew that you didn't have to do it, and you did it anyway, right, then if you had in mind to make it a minig immediately, right, then it's what's it called, it becomes a minig immediately, and it's a nether. And in order to stop doing it, you have to be mater neder. Or but you didn't have in mind that it should take effect immediately, then three, if you did it for 3 years, then also it has the effect of the nether, and in order to stop doing it, you have to have Hataras Nadar. Okay. So the Maisa, La Halacha, Maiser Ksafim is a minig. It's a nice thing to do, but it's not something that you have to do, and because of that, we'll see that there are various leniencies that you can rely on. Okay, I'm not going to take any questions yet, because I'm sure I'm going to get to what you're asking questions. We didn't say anything yet. Okay, so let's get to the, what's it called, to the, what we have to say. If there's any questions after we're finished, or maybe I'll stop after each subheading here, I'll take questions. Okay. Now, how much do you have to give? So, obviously, Maiser is 1/10. Okay, however, the Svarim say that 1/10 is the average. If you want to be generous, you give a fifth. Not a tenth, give a fifth. And that has a connection also to the other Maiser, because in any 1 year, you always end up giving a fifth. Either Maiser Rishon and Maiser Sheni, or Maiser Rishon and Maiser Ani. So, I in your fist to give 1/5. However, more than a fifth you shouldn't give, unless there are special circumstances. Amongst them, I'm not going to go into all of them, but amongst them, if you're very rich, you can give more than a fifth. If, what's it called, before a person dies, he's allowed to give all of his money away if he wants, but he shouldn't, since he should leave something for his children. But he's allowed to give more than a fifth to tzedakah before he dies, also kapara, whatever. And there are other, what's it called, situations where you're allowed to give more than a fifth. If you're interested in knowing what they are, so ask a shayla. Okay, now, what's the best way to be mafresh this? And this is all not halacha lemaisa per se. If it's difficult for you to take a tenth off the top of your earnings and give it to tzedakah, if that's difficult, at the end I'll tell you an eitzah lemaisa of what actually to do. But everything we're saying now is the strict halachas of Maiser Ksafim, if you want to take it as if it would be a chiyuv. Okay? But since it's not, you have leeway to do it other ways. Okay? But this is the strict way, if it would be a chiyuv, how you would have to do it. Okay? First of all, they say it's an Eitzah Tova to have a separate kupa, which can either mean a box in your house, where every time you earn something, you take off 10% and put it in the box. So you have separated immediately, in a separate place, your 10%. Don't mix it with your own money. First of all, it's much easier then to give the Maiser to tzedakah, because you never had it as part of your money itself. Well, you have to separate it from your money. You separate it right away when you earned it, and now it's in a separate thing, and you know that's not yours. It's easy to give from that thing. In modern times, what it means is have a separate bank account. Checking account for Maiser, right? And that, when you get your earnings, you divide it and put 10% in that account and the 90% in your own account, and then it's also easier to write a check on an account you know is not yours than to write it from your own personal account. Okay, and again, it's better, even though it's not halachic that you have to do it like that, it's better to separate all the money immediately as soon as you earn it, separate the tenth off the top. And also there's an inyan also of not just taking the money and giving it right away to tzedakah. There's an inyan of being mafresh, of first separating it, putting it aside, and then taking it and giving it. Okay, two steps instead of just one step, just taking it and giving it directly. Okay, now, when do you have to give it out? We didn't yet discuss who you give it to. But whoever you have to give it to, when do you have to give it to them? So, if there are poor people or other people that would be fit, right, eligible for this money, and they're around, you have to give it immediately. And if you don't give it immediately, it could be your over Bal Ta'achir, right, if you don't give it to the first Aniyim that come by. If there are no Aniyim, you don't have to go chasing after them looking for them. And today, though, the poskim say that since there are so many organizations, yeshivas, and things like that, that are constantly asking for money one way or the other, there's no place in the world where there are no Aniyim always around. Okay? Even if they don't come to your door, but the fact that there are organizations like this who are constantly looking for money, that's considered like there are aniyim constantly around. So you have to find the place to be able to give it to, and we'll get to later who is eligible and who comes first, second, third, whatever. Okay, what are you chayiv to give? From what? Okay, so the first year you start out in life, right? Whatever money you have as principal, you take 10% off. The following years, the profits you make from that principal, you take off 10% of the profits. Okay, included in this, is not only monies you earn from working, from a business, from whatever. It also includes money that you inherit, money that you get from bank profits, interest. It's called interest, not really interest. Interest from a bank, or if it's a Galicia bank, interest from a bank, right? And interest means that you actually made something more. But if the only rivachim they give you are hatsmada, right, it makes it that it doesn't lose any money. You don't have to take meiser off of money they give you in the bank just to keep the medad or keep it up to the dollar or whatever other hatsmada could be. Also, what's it called? When somebody gives you a present that's worth money. So here there's a machlokus whether you have to take meiser off of that or not. Somebody gives you a car, right? So do you have to take off meiser for the value of the car? Car is worth $20,000. Do you have to take off $2,000 and give it to meiser? Okay. So most opinions hold that you don't have to take meiser at all, unless you get money. But if you get objects, you don't have to take off meiser at all. There's no meiser. There are opinions who say, or Shlomo Zalman Orbach is one of them, that you do have to take meiser from presents that are not monetary presents also. However, you don't have to go and borrow money to be able to pay the mice, right? You got a car for $20,000. You don't have $2,000 in cash, right, available to give to mice. So you don't have to go and borrow the money. If you'll ever sell the car, then you have to take off from the profits meiser on the car. But if you have the money available, then he would hold, you'd have to take the money out of the bank and give it to meiser to compensate for the 10% of the value of the car. But again, the minika olam is not to take meiser from presents that are not monetary presents. So people get married and they get checks. From that they have to take off meiser. If they get mixers, other kinds of presents, they don't have to take meiser from the value of the other presents. Okay, if people give you money for specific purposes, okay, a parent gives a son who's learning in yeshiva money so he can do his laundry and he can, pay whatever things he has to pay for that he has regular expenses for, and the parent figures out the laundry costs, let's say, $10 a month, and other expenses that he has, traveling expenses or whatever, cost another $10 a month, so the parent gives the kid $20 every month, and it's earmarked for these expenses, okay? Then the child is not required to take meiser from that, because it's not his money. It's basically the parent paying his expenses. And therefore, if the son decides that he wants to wear dirty clothes and save the $10 for other things, right? First of all, probably he's stealing from his parents because they don't want him to wear dirty clothes. And that money's really not his. So therefore, he doesn't have to take off meiser. But if they give him money and they say, look, here's the money we think that you really need for the month, do what you want. You want to wear dirty clothes because of the bag, you'll have $10 extra, right? But it'll cover your expenses, whatever they are, and you do it as you like, then the chora, he has to take meiser off of it. But if it's meant specifically, parents support children, pay their rent or whatever, then they're not allowed to take meiser off the rent money, because then they make the parents have to pay more for the rent or whatever. They're making the parents basically pay the meiser. It's not their money. So if things are specifically earmarked for certain to pay certain bills or whatever, and you get money that's earmarked for that, you don't take Maaser of it. Okay. In certain cases, you're allowed to take Maaser if you want. You're not required. In certain cases, you're not allowed to take because you're only stealing from the person who gave you the money. Okay. Next, taxes. Taxes that are taken off your income to begin with. You never see it. Like Mas Hakhnasa. Okay? Income tax. Where the government takes it off your salary to begin with, right? Even if it's taken off at the end of the year, but the Maaser, that's not money that you earn. But usually it's taken off from your salary. You don't get the whole salary. It's taken off. You may get a return at the end of the year. You may have to pay more at the end of the year, but a certain amount that's taken off of what's it called to begin with, that you don't have to take Maaser off of. That's not your money. That you earn money and the government took it, you give it for them. But any taxes that are taken off after the fact, you earn the money, now you have to pay taxes. There's expenses, like Arnona, things like that. That is included in your cheshbon of Maaser. So if you earn 10,000 shekel, right, a year, I started to say a month, huh? The 10,000 shekel a year, and what's it called? They take off 2,000 shekel of that off the top, then you only have to take Maaser off of 8,000 shekel. But if you have to pay 500 shekel Arnona, right, that 500 shekel also has to have Maaser taken off of it, because that's your money. Now you have an expense to pay 500 shekel. So you have to take Maaser off 8,000 shekel, not 7,500. And anything similar to that also is included in your cheshbon of how much to take the 10% off. The opposite is also true. Let's say your employer pays things that you normally would have to pay, and you would have paid if he doesn't pay for you. Your employer pays your health insurance. He pays your health insurance. Then that's part of your salary. So even though you don't see it, but you do see it because you get the health insurance benefit. If he wouldn't pay it, you'd have to pay it. So you'd have to take it out basically of the same thing. So that's considered wages that you have to take 10% to. So again, if you earn $8,000 a year and the employer pays $2,000 in health insurance for you, you have to take Maaser off $10,000, not just the $8,000 that you actually see. If you have a business, okay, even not a business, you work and whatever, and you have, things that you need for your basic upkeep of your house, right? You get married, you have to buy a refrigerator, you have to buy a stove, you have to buy furniture, whatever, basics, not luxurious things. We're not talking buying, you know, a sculpture that you keep in the middle of your living room, you know, that, or whatever, right? Which they hide every time we come here on Wednesday night. We're talking about basics, okay? A table, chairs, beds, or whatever. That, you don't have to take Maaser off of. After you buy all those basics, then you start taking Maaser. Okay. Next, this halacha applies both to men and to women. And no difference. Little children also should be taught, if they have money that they earn, not that's given to them, they should also take off Maaser. Okay? Or if you give them an allowance, they should learn to take off Maaser from their allowance. But if you're paying their bills, they shouldn't be taught to take Maaser off, because then you're going to have to give them more money to pay the bill. So you don't have to suffer because you want to be mechanech them in Maaser. It says that some opinions hold that someone who needs help, he can't do it on his own, he needs assistance, he has to take tzedakah, he is not required to give Maaser. He's required to give a minimum of tzedakah, but not Maaser. Okay? Here in this situation, it's still good to give. However, if you really can't exist without tzedakah, then you're not allowed to give Maaser, because the Maaser is not on your cheshbon, you have to go collect more money so you'll be able to live. So the Maaser is on somebody else's cheshbon. Then you shouldn't give Maaser at all. If you live bedachkus, right, and you do take Maaser, you are allowed to borrow the Maaser money for your own use and pay it back when you'll have more money and things will get better. So you can borrow the Maaser money, keep a cheshbon, and at some point when you get rich, you can pay it back. Okay, but since, according to many opinions, you don't have to take the Maaser off altogether, you're only doing it, you know, voluntarily, it's okay to borrow the money if you need it. Okay, when do you, how do you separate the money? It's good to do it with a cheshbon, not to do it by estimating, even if you'll overestimate. In other words, I know for sure I'm taking off more than Maaser, okay, based on my expenses and my, based on my income or whatever, and my, what I give to tzedakah, or what I give that's legally considered Maaser, giving Maaser, I'm way over. So I don't plan to make a cheshbon, I'm just going to do it estimating, and I'm surely going to be on the plus side. You shouldn't do that. You should make a cheshbon and give Maaser. You want to give more, you can give more too. But you should give Maaser with a cheshbon. There's a special inyan for doing that, not to do it ba'omid. However, what's it called? If you do it and you know for sure that you are on the plus side, that's also okay. But it's not l'chatchila. You should take off Maaser at least, the cheshbon should be made on a yearly basis. You can make it on a daily basis, weekly basis, or whatever. But at least on a yearly basis. And therefore, anything in the same year, and usually the year starts at Tishrei and ends at Tishrei, okay? So any profits you make during the year are offset by any losses you have that same year. But if you make profits this year and you had losses the next year, you can't take off those losses from the previous year. You take them off the losses from that next year. Every year is a separate unit to itself. There's got to be profits and losses. Yeah, however, the other way, let's say you gave more Maaser last year than you had to give, right? You were, the Maaser owed you, okay? You gave more in Maaser than you really had to give. You only earned $1,000 in the year, you only had to give $100 Maaser, and you get $500 Maaser. So you have $400 credit. You can use that credit the next year, okay? You can't offset losses and profits from year to year. But you can carry over credits that you have from your Maaser to the next year. Okay. You can also consider Maaser and take off your Maaser what you give in services. Let's say you have you're a tailor. Okay, that's your profession. So you do tailoring for poor people and either don't charge them or you charge them less than you normally would charge a regular person. So the difference between what you could have made and what you actually charge that person is considered tzedakah. And you can take that off your Maaser as if you gave that as Maaser. So let's say you do this for a lot of people and it comes out that you basically gave $100 worth of services to someone, right? And you have $100 Maaser to take off with $1,000 that you earn, you don't have to take it off. You already took it off. You gave that $100 in services to poor people. So anything similar to that also. Or you sell things to people and you sell it cheaper than you would normally sell it because they're poor or whatever. Now there is an opinion that you only consider your earnings after all your household expenses. And again, that's normal expenses for food, clothing, heat, air conditioning perhaps in a place that's hot, and any normal expense that's considered what an average person would spend on, right? So that's an opinion. We don't hold like that. You shouldn't rely on that. Because most people, if they would only take off their earnings that are left after all their expenses are deducted, they would have like 2 or 3 pennies left of a Maaser to give. Okay, so l'maaser, however, what you can deduct expenses, okay, are the following: expenses that are entailed in earning the money. For instance, a woman has a job; she earns $1,000 a month. Okay, but she has to pay a babysitter $500 a month to be able to go to that job. She didn't pay the babysitter, she wouldn't be able to have the job. So in order to earn the $1,000, she has to spend $500. So she's only earning $500. That expense you're surely allowed to deduct. Or anything similar to that, even to the point where it's brought down, a woman works in an office, and she has to therefore buy suits that are presentable, right, to be able to work in this office. They demand that she comes dressed properly, nicely. She wouldn't have bought expensive suits like that on her own. She only bought it, it's work clothing. Or a man, what's it called? He works, he has to buy a uniform. Or he has to buy work clothing that he wouldn't have bought if he didn't have this job. So that's also can be deducted, because you couldn't work if you didn't have the work clothing. So that's a business expense. That also can be deducted. Anything similar to that. Okay, now, who and for what do you give the miser? Now you have the miser in a separate account. What do you do with it? What are you allowed to give it to? And what kinds of things? Okay, the main consideration, before we get into the details, is you can't give it for anything that you're required to do by halacha. Okay? In other words, any mitzvah that I have to do, I can't use miser to pay for that. And have to do doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has to do it, but I have to do it. For instance, I made a neder in shul to give, $100 for Atohar Esa, okay? And on Simchas Torah, okay? I didn't, I'm saying somebody did that. Somebody, right, made a neder and he bought Atohar Esa. Now he's chayiv to give that money. He made a neder, he has to pay it. Now he decides, you know what, I want to pay that with miser. He's not allowed to do that, because he's responsible to pay that $100, right? And now he wants to use the miser to pay a debt that he has, which he has to pay. He can't do that. But nobody said he had to buy Atah HaResa, right? He wanted to buy Atah HaResa. So if before he bought the Atah HaResa and made that nether, he said to himself, I'm going to take $100 from my miser and use it to buy Atah HaResa. That he's allowed to do. Because he wasn't required to buy Atah HaResa and to give $100 to the shul before he made the nether. So if before the nether you decide you're going to use miser for that, that's fine. But after you made the nether, now you're required to pay it. Now you can't pay it for miser anymore. Don't get anything similar to that. You can also use the miser not to give out directly to any poor person, but you can use it to buy things to loan to people who are in need. For instance, you can use it to make a gemach of loan, of money to loan. As long as you keep loaning that money to poor people over and over and over again, right, then that money is miyuah to help poor people, right? Even though no one is really getting it to keep. But you're not getting it either. It's a perpetual loan fund. That's fine. Or you can buy things and make a gemach of chafetzim. If you look in the Kir Sefer book, they have a gemach for everything you can imagine. Even pacifiers and who knows what else. What's it called? The gemach for safety pins for people who rip their pants. So you can do that. You can buy $1,000 worth of safety pins and keep them ready for anybody who rips their pants and comes to you for a safety pin that they can't find anywhere else. Okay. You can also use the money of miser to be mochel, right? Forgive a loan. Okay, somebody owes you money who's poor, he can't pay you, right? Or he doesn't want to pay you, whatever the situation being, and he owes you $1,000, and you have $1,000 worth of miser. You can take that $1,000 worth of miser, take it for yourself, and not take the $1,000 that person owes you, and that will cancel each other out. But it's only if the person's poor. Do you have to tell him? It's a good thing to tell him, yes. Because otherwise, he thinks he's a ganav. They may not care about it, but that's what he is. Okay. Unless he really doesn't have the money, or whatever. Okay. The main destination for miser money is to poor people. Okay. All other things, now what kind of poor people, we'll get to in a second. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of this, but just give you what some of the considerations are. Okay, you have to give it to poor people. Which poor people? So your relatives come first. If you have poor relatives, they come before anybody else. Here, nepotism is okay. And the closer the relative, the more responsibility you have to them. Okay, so a child comes before somebody who's not your child, right? An uncle comes before a second cousin, and so on and so on. If you don't have any relatives, then the next consideration is aniye ircha, people who live in your city and are poor. They come before people from a different city. People who live in Eretz Yisrael come even before aniye ircha. Okay? If you live in Chutz Laretz, and you have people in your city that need money, and Eretz Yisrael people, the Eretz Yisrael people have a din of aniye ircha. Okay? Yerushalayim comes before the rest of Eretz Yisrael. So aniye Yerushalayim also have a kedima. Now again, you have to put a lot of these factors together and then decide who comes first, because sometimes the factors are conflicting. But these are factors to take into consideration. Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, a woman who needs comes before a man. Okay, here's a case where women get preferential treatment. A Kohen comes before a Levi, and a Levi comes before Yisrael. The person who has a greater need comes before a person who has a lesser need. Okay, a person you don't like comes before a person you do like, in order that you should be kovashir yetzer hara. Even if a person that you don't like and you have a right not to like him because you saw him do averas that make him in your eyes a rasha, even though you're not allowed to tell anybody about it, you're allowed to hate the person for his rishas, but you still have to get him stuck. You still have to help him. So he comes before somebody you like. What? Well, so then you should what's it called? Okay, that's true. So you give it to him through a third party. Amolei Torah, people who are Oseik BaTorah, Talmidei Chachamim, who fit the other, what's it called, we're not talking about a Talmud Chacham who happens to be a millionaire, right? But a Talmud Chacham who's poor, also that's a consideration too. Okay, now, can you use it to support your own family, right? My kids are poor because, they don't have any income, okay? They only get because I support them, and the halacha is that you don't have to support an older child. What's considered, according to halacha, an older child? 6 years old. Once your kids are six, you don't have to feed them. Okay? You can, mitzad hadin, we'll see in a second that that's not operative, okay? You can send them out begging, and you don't have to supply, you don't have to support them, okay? Now, one second, however, since in most developed countries in the world, right, it's expected of parents to support their children even when they're beyond six, right? And also peer pressure. Society has made it a norm to support your children even beyond six. That's something that you have to do. You don't really have a choice, right? You have to do it because of the government, or you have to do it because of peer pressure. That already is considered that you have to do it. Therefore, you can't support your children who are over six and give your meister to offset their food money. However, children who are older than that, where it's not normal to support them, you have a 36-year-old child living in your house and you're supporting him, okay? That you can take off meister, because that's not expected. And usually until children reach an age where it's expected for them to go out and get a job and support themselves, you're required to support them. You can't give them meister. And at an age where in that place, it's normal for a kid that age, not a kid anymore, to go out and support himself, then you can take off. If you're supporting him, you take off for meister. Same thing goes for sons-in-law, daughters-in-law, right? In situations where they, you don't have to support them, right? You don't have to give them anything, right? Sometimes you don't. Right, but if you choose to, then you can give it for meiser. However, if you obligate yourself when the child gets married, right, to a certain amount to give, then the chari you can't take that for meiser, unless in the beginning you made up that you obligated yourself and understood you're going to take it for meiser, like we said with the nether of this of Atares. Your father and mother, who need to be supported. You're not required to support your father and mother, so theoretically you can take it from Meiser, but if you have money to do it without Meiser, you should do it with that, because there's a klola on people who support their parents for Meiser money, who could support them without Meiser money. But if you can't, you need the Meiser money to support a parent, their expenses are very big expenses, you're supporting them and putting them in an old age home or whatever, which charges a lot of money, and you don't have the money unless you use your Meisr money, you're allowed to use the Meisr money. Marrying off children, you're allowed to use for Meisr money if you don't, you're not able to do it with your regular money. Tuition. So since you have to educate your children, even girls, so most tuition you can't take off Meisr. However, if you could educate your child in a minimal way and not send them to a better school with a dormitory or whatever, you can keep them home, right? And then you can, then for the extras, more than the basic tuition that would cost you to give them the minimal Jewish education, you want to have a better education, right? Then you can use Meisr money for the extra tuition that it costs. Okay, and again, it really depends on what the minhag ha'olam is, what is expected of a person, and what he's doing totally voluntarily. Okay, now, mitzvahs that you don't have to do, you're allowed to use Meisr money for. Okay, if you don't have to do the mitzvah, like donating to a shul, whatever, helping build a shul, a mikvah, whatever, that you're not. But if you live in a community and there's a mas, you have to give, towards this thing. You live in the community, everybody's taxed to help build the shul, then you, or you have dues to pay in your shul, or whatever, then you can't take that, those dues from Meisr. Or you can even use it for a mitzvah that you're required to do, but you want to do it in a nicer way. You can buy a minimal Esrog and Lulav for 50 shekel, a set. But you want to buy a nice set. So anything more than a third from the minimal, you're mechuyev to add a third, right, for hiddur mitzvah. So let's say 60, and you want to add now a third. Really, it doesn't work like that. Let's make it 40, and you add a third, another 10. Yeah? No. Yeah? Whatever. So the third means that now you'll have four parts equal. So whatever it is, whatever comes out. After that amount, you want to buy a nicer one, you could use Meisr money for the extra. Svarim. Right? If you buy Svarim to learn from and also to loan out to anybody who wants to use them, and you let people know that they're available for loan, then theoretically you can buy Svarim. If you have other money to buy Svarim, you shouldn't buy it like that. If you do buy it like that, you have to write in the Sefer that it came from Meisr money. So after it becomes a Yerusha, people will know that it's not theirs. It belongs to Meisr, and they have to loan it out. It's not, they can't treat it as if it's their Sefer. Presents. You go to a Chasana. So if you normally would give they gave presents to your kids, and now you have to give presents to their kids. Okay, so if it's expected, then if that's what's normally expected, then you can't give from Meisr, because you're required to do that. Okay, maybe not according to halacha, but you're required according to peer pressure. But let's say you wouldn't have given a present. You went to a chasan and you wouldn't give a present. And the person needs the money, and you want to give them the present almost as tzedakah. You could take it from Meisr. Or you want to give more than normally a person would give. Right? You want to give a bar mitzvah bacher 500 shekel, right, instead of giving him a sefer that costs 30 shekel. Right? So, the 30 shekel, the chari you have to deduct, because everybody gives like 30 shekel sefer, and you're giving the kid 500 shekel, you can use 470 shekel as a bar mitzvah present. By the way, my grandson just became bar mitzvah. No connection between the two, but thank you. you go to a dinner, okay? Remember what those things were? We don't have too much of a chance to do that today. Right, there's not too many dinners that charge money or even a lot of money. Tzedakah dinner, but in America it's like every week or whatever you have to go to some dinner for tzedakah. So there, let's say it's $100 a plate. Okay, that's the dinner cost. Now you would not go to a restaurant for the kind of meal they give you at this dinner and pay $100. Okay, no way. You would maybe pay $20 for that meal if you went out. So you benefit $20 from going out to eat, right, at this dinner. Okay. You also got a lot of speeches that you had to listen to or whatever, right? So you benefited tremendously by being at this dinner. But the actual food, you only benefit $20 with. The $80 extra, you can take off Meisr. Because that's basically tzedakah. But you can't take off the $20 if you enjoy the meal. Right. You buy a lottery ticket. Can you buy it with Meisr? Some hold you can't buy a bechlal with Meisr. You shouldn't get involved with using Meisser money for buying lottery tickets because it becomes complicated. Some hold that Rav Moshe Feinstein says like this: if there's a set amount of tickets, some lotteries you have a chance of winning, right? Because there's a set amount of tickets. They don't even sell 100 tickets, and the prize is $1,000. So you can figure out statistic-wise, out of 100 tickets, and you can win $1,000, about how much each ticket is worth. Okay, so that amount you can't take from Meisser. But the rest of it, let's say each ticket is $100. There's 100 tickets that could possibly be bought, so you have 1% chance of winning $1,000 for a $100 donation. So the ticket itself maybe is worth $4, value-wise, right? You could sell it to somebody for $4. But you spent $100, so $96 is basically a donation because you're not sure you're going to win. So you can take the $96 and use it from Meisser. That's what the Rav Moshe Feinstein holds. Rav Eliashiv says a different cheshbon. He says the tzedakah has a certain amount that they make on each ticket and a certain amount they have to take off for the prizes. Okay? They're expecting to sell a certain amount of tickets, so they'll make a certain profit. Out of that, they have to take out the prizes they're going to have to give. So whatever percentage of the ticket doesn't go to the tzedakah, goes for the prizes, that you can't take off Meisser. Whatever percentage is left that the tzedakah gets free and clear, that much is a donation that you can take off. Now what happens if you win? Okay, so now you win, you spent $100 for out of Meisser money, right? 90 on a kartis hagrala, on a lottery ticket, and you won $1,000,000. Who does that $1,000,000 belong to? So some say that the $1,000,000 belongs to Meisser because it was Meisser's ticket. Okay. Others say that you can pay back Meisser the amount that the ticket cost. You big sport, right? Well, you know, I borrowed $100 from Meisser, and I'm going to give back the $100 and be a big sport and keep the rest of the million. And that, some say you can do that. The halacha, what's it called? Again, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach holds the whole prize belongs to Meisser. Rav Eliashiv holds that you can keep 20% of the prize, and the other 80% has to go to a tzedakah, okay, to that tzedakah. And even if, according to the one who says that you can keep the whole thing, but you should give Meisser of what you won to the tzedakah, that's not getting what according to the other one, because you get the whole thing. Okay. Those are more or less the halachas of Meisser, obviously not in great detail, but enough to give you an idea of what kind of shailas you have to ask. Just to go into some of the tamim of Meisser. Meisser is there to let us recognize that what we make belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave it to us, and he has a right to tell us to take a portion of it, or take the whole thing if he wants, and use it for whatever he wants. So we get in the habit of doing it by 2 years taking off Meisser Sheni and enjoying it, but knowing that God can tell us where to go with it and what to do with it or whatever. And the third year, after you're used to that, you can give it to an Ani and understand that you're not giving away anything of yours. God's giving you 9/10. He's only asking you to take 1 of the 10 that he gave you and do something else with it. It's also in order to, what's it called, to support Aniyim and Meshor Se Hashem, people who learn Torah, Kohanim, Levim, or whatever. And they're what's it called? That is also that you feel a responsibility to see to it that there is people who serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that there's people who are poor. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave you responsibility to see to it that you take care of them. He could take care of them. He wants you to have the schus to take care of them. That's basically the ideas behind Meisser. The Schar, it says if you give Meisser, you're zoche to become rich, and even though sometimes not, but the Meisser, it's there, it's like a seed. And if you have all the other conditions, it'll grow. If you plant it in asphalt, it's not going to grow. But the giving of Meisser is a reason to get rich. Some say that's only if you give a fifth. There's no school that's to get rich if you only take off Meisser, if you only take off a fifth. You're allowed to even test God with Meisser, right? And see if he'll give you back. The Shulchan Aruch says with any Meisser. The Shaloh HaKadosh says only with Meisser Dagon, not with this Meisser. And the Rabbeinu Bachya says with any tzedakah, not even Meisser, any tzedakah you can test the Ribbono Shel Olam. It also says that you won't be damaged. It's a protection from damage to give Meiser. It protects your property, your money, and it makes your tefillah heard, and you're saved from sicknesses. It even says that Chazon Ish once told someone who had many miscarriages that they should be medaktik in Meiser, and that will protect them. Lemaisa. Okay, and we'll end with this. I didn't realize it was so late. Lemaisa. If you can easily afford to give Meiser the way that we described it, for the things that we described are proper, then do that. But if you can't easily do that, okay, then what I tell people is the following. If they haven't taken off Meiser knowing that they didn't have to and did it as a nether, then there's other problem. There's a problem with Hataras Nadar. But if you, even if you gave up Meiser, you thought you had to, or you never did this, you're starting off now, then what you should do is the following. You should say that I'm only taking Meiser b'li nether. I'm not doing it as a chiyuv of Meiser, right, the way it has to be done, what's it called, in detail. I'm doing it because I want to do it, and I have to have the right, therefore, to do it my way. And whatever I separate for Meiser is not considered tzedakah until it actually gets into the hand of the ani. It's another condition you should make. And I can give it when I want to give it. No restraints of having to give it a certain time. I can do with it when I want to, and it does not consider tzedakah until it gets into the hands of the ani. Now, what a person should do then is the following. He should separate the Meiser off the top, based on with the deductions he can take or whatever, but take it off the top. Half of it, 5%, he should give to aniyim, if he can afford that. The other 5%, he can use for mitzvahs and other things that are not things that we mentioned. In other words, like lulav and esrig and matzah, preferably the extra hiddur, right? You could get cheapest matzahs possible, you want to get, you know, extra special matzahs, so the extra that you want to spend, the lulav or whatever, but even regular mitzvahs, because this is based on the fact that there are many, like, the opinions that say you don't have to take off Meiser except after all your expenses. That means that you don't have any chiyuv of Meiser almost. Nobody has anything significant that they have to take off. So you're giving extra anyway. There are opinions that say you could use it for mitzvahs. Right? You don't have to buy an esrog and lulav, you just have to be yotzi esrog and lulav, so you have to own it. You can get it matan amas lahasr from somebody else, borrow it from somebody else. They should give it to you, it should be yours for the first day. The rest of the days you can even borrow it. So many of these mitzvahs, you don't have to actually spend money on them. Right? You don't have to have tefillin, borrow your neighbor's tefillin every day. So, therefore, there's a svara to say you can use it for these mitzvahs too. So, you can buy mitzvahs with it, or whatever, and use it for things that you would have to use anyway, that other 5%, but you should keep a cheshbon, that if any day you'll become rich, you'll win the lottery, not with a Meiser ticket, right? And then you'll, what's it called, you'll pay back the Meiser. So you should keep a cheshbon, and even the first 5% that you're supposed to give to poor people, right? If you can't afford, you need it, you're poor, then you can borrow that money too. Use your Meiser completely for all your things, keep a cheshbon, and if you ever become rich, you'll pay it back. That's an Eitzah Tova for people who really can't afford to take off 10% and use it in the way that we mentioned.